This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio. You are listening to the Forza Italian Football Podcast on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. Oh, Kev, I've done it again. Let's pause and reset. Hello and welcome to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast, the only Italian football podcast bringing you inside the Serie A stadiums every single week. And this week we were inside an extra Serie A stadium because one of our guests today, Kev Borgoselski, was inside one of them. Kev, you're in Bologna.
Hello. I was.
Well, you are.
I am, yes. Sorry, yes, I am. I am still here.
I have a question for you already, straight off the bat, because I am suffering in Parma today because, for whatever reason, all of the pollen seems to have come out today and it's hitting me like a truck. Is it the same down there?
Yeah, we have plenty down in Bologna. Don't worry. I'm sniffling away.
So, apologies on behalf of myself and Kev to all of the listeners for us sniffling our way through the next hour or so, but you'll just have to bear with us. We also have the zombie of Vito Doria joining us. Vito, we appreciate you getting up early on a Sunday morning for us.
Yes, yeah. Although it's good to be chatting to you guys here, I've only had about 5 hours sleep, so yeah, sort of had to rush for everything to be on the pod, and you know, when you get a bit straight after a 3-0 loss to your team, it's not easy.
Vito, now you know how I usually feel, because we usually record at 1 a.m. my time, and that means I get to bed back at 4, close to 5 usually, so you're taking one for the team this week, and we appreciate it. But guys, There was, of course, news in Serie A this week, if it really counts as news. Juventus are champions. What a surprise. They've gone for the hashtag W8derful, which I think is supposed to spell wonderful. It doesn't work, let's be honest. But Kev, are they wonderful?
I think you know for what what's been published on our site that I don't think they are at the moment. It's probably the worst incarnation of the last 8 seasons.
The worst.
Yeah, I think so. I love a stat, and I think if you look at the statistics, there's a little bit of Juve getting a little bit dependent on a certain Cristiano Ronaldo this year. The level of Serie A has dipped a little bit. And if you just think about the flair and style that some of the other Juventus sides went about their business, just all points to this is a Juventus side that needs a little bit of a rejig.
But are they going to do that? Because they spent however many million last year to bring in Cristiano Ronaldo. They're not going to spend big again to bring in other players, are they?
Well, this is the problem. I think they've mortgaged the house to win the Champions League, which isn't going to happen now. And, you know, Ronaldo's not going to say, take half my salary back because I've not quite delivered what you bought me for, so you can then go and strengthen other areas. It's going to be an interesting couple of years. That said, if they actually had any competition to maybe knock them off their perch.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Vito, where do you think this achievement stands? Because winning the Scudetto is surely still an achievement.
I'm sure the Juventus supporters will be happy with it. And then you get the odd supporter saying, look at where the club was 12 years ago. They were in Serie B, so be glad that they're up top and they're in Serie A. For us as neutrals, though, they can be happy with winning 8 Scudetti because it's never been achieved in Italian football. But I still believe that Juve are the best of what is a weak bunch. And performance-wise, they're still doing it in the classical Italian style more so than ever. It's just doing enough to win, relying on individuals to get the goals, and yeah, just relying on good defending. But that being said, when Chiellini's not fit, I've noticed that they've become a bit more vulnerable defensively. So If he has more injury issues next season, I'd be curious to see how long Juventus can maintain their domestic dominance.
It's definitely a problem for them. We've seen Bonucci go back there this season and be a disaster. Rugani, I've made my thoughts on him clear now throughout the season. I don't think he's up to the level of a Juventus backup player. And Adam Digby, friend of the pod, was saying on Twitter today how he'd prefer to see Andrea Barzagli's father play in defence as opposed to the two of those lining up together. So, Kev, they've almost focused too much on the Champions League and Cristiano Ronaldo, and they've forgotten the basics that made them so successful in the first place.
Yeah, but you can understand why, because they've not, apart from last year, really, they've not really been pushed in Serie A. And then yet they failed to take that last hurdle or two in the Champions League. And they found a born winner, you know, in Ronaldo, somebody that made the difference against Atletico. But, you know, the proof was in this season's campaign where it proved that one man cannot sort of drag you through every single stage of the competition.
Oh, it was a strange one. About Cristiano Ronaldo, because there's stories coming out about how he's not happy in Italy now and how he might be moving on. I know he said afterwards, after they confirmed the title today, that he will 1,000% be at Juventus next season. Just confirming that nobody at Juventus seems to be good with numbers. But Vito, has Cristiano Ronaldo's arrival somehow made Juventus worse?
I suppose that there has been a bigger dependence on him for goals, and maybe they're not that much better cohesively, because let's face it, Juventus at Allegri haven't been the most fluid side by any stretch of the imagination. What it just shows to me, at least, is that Allegri will still rely on individuals to score the goals, and Ronaldo has pretty much done that. And another thing too is I think perhaps his presence might not suit certain individuals in the squad. For instance, Paulo Dybala has had a rather poor season by his standards. And last season, especially in the first opening 6 or 8 rounds, he was absolutely phenomenal. I would go that far to say Dybala was sensational. He had something like 10 goals in just 6 games. But this year, he looks nothing close to emulating that form.
Yeah, well, speaking of it, something we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, Kev, Paulo Dybala is now being linked with a move away by Tutto Sport, and I think Corriere dello Sport or the other, saying that he might be off to Inter in a swap deal for, you guessed it, Mauro Icardi.
See, I just can't see how that makes sense. Now, Vito mentioned Dybala's form at the start of the season. That was when Ronaldo was having his own difficulties, when Allegri started playing him off the left, and then for whatever reason, maybe the players' unhappiness at being, if you like, out there, he sort of kind of moved into the middle. That has kind of seen a lack of effectiveness from Dybala wherever they've sort of tried to shoehorn him in. And if you think if you're bringing in somebody else like Icardi, he'd only really play down the middle. And can you see him and Ronaldo playing together? I can't.
We've got a couple of comments.
Actually,
go, Vito, go.
No, I was going to say, that I took out. That was actually from last season. That run of 10 goals in just 6 games was not from this season. So that was before Ronaldo.
But Dybala seemed to be a more influential part of the team at the start of the season when Ronaldo did begin on the left-hand side. I can't remember his form, but at least Allegri started the season wanting Dybala to be part of that setup. It only seems to be Ronaldo's position within the starting 11 that's changed that. And, you know, one of those, going back to my Quagliarella point, you know, one of those is the younger man, and maybe the team you should leave him alone. Sorry, I was just saying, I'm old as well. Don't worry.
Oh, so now you're old. Okay. I can't keep up with you, Kev. Really, but we do have a couple of comments coming in. Praise Boy says, you can never feel too bad when you win the league. It's the bread and butter. It seems Champions League makes and breaks seasons, yet clubs like Manchester City won't win it either. But I'd argue Manchester City won't win it because they're being pushed every single week in a title race, whereas Juventus have had the league wrapped up since August, and they still didn't go that step in Europe. And let's be honest, they didn't sign Cristiano Ronaldo to win Serie A. They signed him to win the Champions League. And so that was then their benchmark for the season. To fall short of that, I think I wrote about it after the first leg against Atletico Madrid. And I think this season they failed.
Yeah, I believe that's the case.
All right, fair enough. And Filippo Cacamo has come in and said, I hear players like Pjanic, Alexandro, and Dybala will leave in the summer. Vito, do you think they should? And if they do, who comes in?
Look, I personally think Pjanic should stay, but they just need that extra creativity in midfield. I don't think Aaron Ramsey's that kind of guy, like, say, Andrea Pirlo was, to be playing defence-splitting passes and, you know, provide that extra vision in midfield. Aaron Ramsey's a guy that he'll probably be like a improvement on, say, what Marquisio was or what Emre Can has been doing this season. He'll chip in with goals and so forth, have extra characteristics, but they still need that extra guy to dictate the midfield or actually play between the lines more adequately than, say, what Dybala has done.
It is going to be a strange one because you do think they need to strengthen, but yeah, I don't know. I really can't work it out. Kev, we're going to get in trouble for this, but Juventus won their 35th Scudetto this year, but for some reason, the club's failings with numbers continued and they keep saying 37. Why do they keep being allowed? Why are they still allowed to do this?
Well, you know, it pleases the fans. You know, the fans get a little bit of a buzz out of the club still referring to it as 37. And I think if I was a player, I would still claim that title. But I think the club has to take some responsibility of the fact that they had them stripped. They had them stripped from their honours board based on things that they did. You know, whether the players were aware of that or not, because I'm kind of under no doubt that the players were going out believing that they had to do what they had to do to win games and that they played those two seasons and won those trophies. So if you're a player sat at home and you've got a medal somewhere, because I'm not aware that they go round and round up the medals that were given out to players. But for the club, it's just petty. It's just a little thing to get your supporters. You know, they see the 37 go up and you get a little extra cheer.
But everyone else just thinks it's so predictable and so it's just disrespectful as well. It's almost like they're boasting about the things that they were accused of and proven of doing. And I just drives me mad. I completely agree with the players' situation, the players' point, by the way. They absolutely have no part in this, right? You would feel like you won those titles, as they always say, sul campo, on the pitch, but it's been proven otherwise.
When you say it's disrespectful to the other teams, though, you know, there's one team in particular who were certainly, inverted commas, handed the second title to Inter. And Juve have always been very vocal that they believe that Juventus were leaning on, you know, whether any of those allegations proved true. But, you know, so it's, again, it's handbags, it's petty, it's one-upmanship.
If we go to the two-legger Serie A and the Federation, though, it's disrespectful to them because they've said, you don't own these titles, but Juventus keep saying, yes, we do. Why don't they just fine them every time they show the number 37?
Because they don't fine anybody for worse things, so...
Yeah, but the way it works here is terrible things get ignored and the not-so-terrible things get heavily fined, so you would think.
Was it €86,000 for a couple of players holding up a Chevy shirt?
Yeah. Well, that was a new low for Italian football, as we discussed last week, Kev. So, speaking of new lows, Lazio will be discussed later on. But are we finished with Juve?
I think so, yeah.
Absolutely. Congratulations to the Bianconeri for winning the title. I suppose they deserve that much at least because they did win it. They have won 8 in a row. It is a remarkable achievement. It's not their fault. They're so much better than everyone else, I guess. And as boring as it can be, it's probably to their credit that it is boring. But anyway, speaking of boring, AC Milan. They were held at Parma today. I was at the Tardini. And Vito, they had all of the ball, but did nothing with it.
For a game that had two goals, I've seen 0-0 draws that were probably a bit more exciting in terms of the quality of the play, and that pretty much says a lot about the game in general. Milan in particular, I thought were rather sloppy in possession and very predictable. To be honest, in the first half at least, I thought Parma created far better chances and they were defending deep and hitting on the break. But whenever they moved forward, they looked a bit more sharper. And in the second half, they had more of the ball, but really just took one moment of quality. And that's rare quality from Suso to set up Castillejo, because Suso still is still not doing enough for my liking or most other people's liking. So, yeah, I just think collectively they're not doing enough to add to that scoreline. And I think a 1-1 draw is a fair result.
Absolutely. If Parma had lost this, it would have been quite criminal. Despite, I think they only had three shots on target, but they definitely deserve the point. Kev, Vito touched on it. Suso, he had a moment of quality, oddly with his right foot as well. And other than that, he did nothing in the game, himself and Calhanoglu. And I still don't know why the two of them play every week.
Well, I think because we've got a transfer window that clubs have got to adhere to. I wrote in my notes, actually, I was quite surprised it was with his right foot. I was kind of half expecting him to cut back in on his left. But, yeah, it was... a decent ball in and a sort of a great header from Castillejo.
Yeah, it was a really, really good header. Just moments after coming on as well. I don't quite know how he managed to divert it on target from where he was, especially to fly across Luis Giuseppe like that, but it was really, really good. Speaking of Castillejo, Kev, however you say his name, he's got a little bit about him. I know he's inconsistent like the rest of them, but surely he's deserving of a chance to play over one of these two?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. He's inconsistent like the rest of them. I've been banging on for weeks about Milan need to look at players sort of, if you like, one level up from those if they're going to be in the Champions League next year. But that said, the way that Calhanoglu and Suso have played in recent weeks, I think if Milan were in a stronger situation going into the Champions League qualifying places, then you could maybe argue for him to go ahead then. But it looks as though Gattuso's just sticking with what has worked, whether it's grinding out the odd point here in Parma or grinding out 1-0 wins over lesser opposition when they've done that in the last few weeks.
But is drawing in Parma going to be enough to do it? Because Roma are now just a point behind them. Atalanta, 3 points behind them. Although Atalanta do have to play Napoli on Monday night, which is an outrage that we'll get into a little bit later on. But is it going to be enough? Because Torino are also floating about there. It's a risky strategy to think that they're just going to like stutter over the line like that. Vito, someone who was quite notable in his absence today was Lucas Paquetá, because he gives Milan something that nobody else in that team does.
He has added an extra dimension to that team since arriving in January. And I do think that if he's fit enough to play, he's someone that can really make a difference in that Milan team. I think we've gone on about Suso and Calhanoglu far too often, but they're just far too predictable for guys that are meant to be the creative outlets of that Rossoneri team. And based on what I saw yesterday, Christoph Piontek has been able to score with limited supply, but the supply was probably that limited yesterday, or that final ball was missing. He rarely got a sniff at goal. So, yeah, there are some serious issues that have to be addressed offensively. And with five games left, Gattuso's got to change something. Even if he acknowledges the changes, he doesn't make enough of the right changes, Gattuso.
Well, that's it. The changes he made today were quite curious, because Every time I've seen Piontek this season, I've kind of made the point of just watching his movement for a little bit. But then about 15 minutes in today, it was obvious there was no point in doing it because whatever he did, the ball wasn't going anywhere near him. And I'm not sure if he had the ball in the box at all. And normally that's a statistic that you would use to beat a striker with, but it completely wasn't his fault because there was just absolutely no service. And then in the second half, Gattuso brought on Patrick Cutrone to play up top with Piontek, and I don't really know why, because then there were just two players in space that wasn't being touched by Milan. It seemed like a kind of a waste of a move, really. But Kev, I'll come to you for the goalkeeper chat, as always. I don't know why, but Gianluigi Donnarumma, he wasn't very good today. He was quite slow, ponderous. He's just back in the team after being given the gloves back by Pepe Reina, and he nearly cost them a penalty in the first half, although he did get the ball. And then he nearly cost them a goal in the second half when he just strolled off his line and allowed Siligardi to take a pass them. And fortunately for him, Siligardi hit the post. And Donnarumma, what's going on?
I don't know. I was a little surprised, actually, to sort of see him start. I know, obviously, he's their number one, but they're one of the few teams that's got, if you like, not necessarily just adequate backup. They've got a goalkeeper there in Pepe Reina that can do just as good a job as Donnarumma in my view. And with him out of the spotlight, with a crucial end of the season coming up and Reina playing as well as he had in the last couple of games, I don't necessarily think Gattuso should have put him straight back into the starting lineup. In a way, it could have been, given the quality of their reserve goalkeeper, the opportunity to give them a little bit of a break, you know, not just necessarily physically, but mentally from the first team. And then, you know, with, let's face it, 75% chance of Champions League football, have the summer to recuperate and be ready for bigger challenges next season.
Certainly something they could have considered. We've got another question from Filippo. Vito, I'll throw it to you. If Milan make the Champions League, will Gattuso be the coach?
I have a few doubts about that. There's been speculation that he might even resign regardless of what happens. And then you got other stories floating around, you know, just the usual suspects being linked with the job. So, yeah, I do question whether he be there next season because he's had enough, or if the board are that demanding and they really want to push for a change, push for a coach that's really going to give them that extra boost in quality or really give them better ideas, whether it be a tactical thing or just in terms of shaping the philosophy of the club, at least on the pitch.
Yeah, well, Antonio Conte's name is obviously still being thrown around. I just can't wait for him to get a job so then we can stop talking about what job he's going to take. Same with Sarri. I just want to know if he's going to be at Chelsea next season or not so we can stop speculating about that because it's mind-numbingly boring at times. But there you go. To the other side of this game then. Guys, Big Bruno did it again. Did you see him, Kev?
I did, and we said it before, it's not unlike him.
He's amazing. He can do everything.
Like defending.
Is defending. He's the reason that Milan couldn't do anything, because they just faced a Portuguese wall who does the work of seven defenders. And when he has the ball, he can spray it as well. He's really, really good. And he's just a beast. He's a monster. He's terrifying, but a beautiful, beautiful man. And when he was taking that free kick, there was absolutely no doubt what was about to happen. He just has this way of standing over them, and everyone in the stadium seemed to think, this is a goal. And sure enough, bang. It wasn't quite as good as Chievo won earlier in the season, in December, also at the Tardini, but that's his third goal of the season from something like 14 shots, which is quite an impressive little ratio. They should stick him up top.
If Inter can try Andrea Ranocchi as a striker, why not?
Oh, Big Bruno. Big Bruno could do a job anywhere. He could take on some teams in Serie A alone and probably get a result. I'm looking at Chievo, Frosinone and Empoli. And to be fair, probably Atalanta on the day. But yeah, Bruno Alves, phenomenal. And
It's probably been a big part of them staying up.
I said this actually in my post-match video, that if he wasn't there, they'd probably be getting relegated. Everyone talks about Gervinho, but Gervinho was great when everyone was still surprised by him until about October. But now people have kind of realized if you just show him certain space, he runs into that space and you can kind of guide him down blind alleys and stuff. But he's someone else I want to talk about because he frustrated me today. And I'm not a Palmer fan by any means, but watching him play and blatantly ignore passes when his teammates are better placed than him is just maddening. And he was at it again today. I just don't. You could see his teammates getting frustrated with him as well. You can really understand why. And Kev, what do you make of Gervinho? Because he was fantastic when he first got to Parma. The goals have kind of dried up. His impact has dried up a little bit. And could you see him being there next year?
Possibly, at least for the first half of the season. I don't think we're seeing anything that we didn't see when he was at Roma or even maybe at Arsenal and Lille. He sort of plays the game within himself. And I don't know how well he takes direction from his coaches, but because of his talent, particularly if you're in a side that is has got limitations attacking areas, you've kind of got to let him go and do his own thing. And maybe some of his teammates accept their frustrations with him because they know what he can do to keep them in this league, particularly, you know, coming up for the first time this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got a role, but I just think there comes a point where if a player is so blatantly just playing for himself that, I don't know, you kind of need to look at things because he doesn't seem like he takes any instructions whatsoever. He just seems to go out there and do his own thing every single week. But there were times where it genuinely looked like Travolo and Siligardi were reluctant to pass the ball to him because they knew he was just going to try and run into space. But yeah, I don't know. Gervinho, frustrating, can be effective, not all that talented, but I don't know, he probably has a role at Parma. Anyway, that'll do for that game. Let's talk about the game that just finished, I guess, Inter Roma. Because we've criticised Roma, we've criticised Claudio Ranieri, but to his credit, Vito, he's kind of made them a little bit more organised.
That's the type of coach Ranieri is. Usually his teams are well organised and they do work hard. So they're pretty much the hallmarks of his teams. I think Roma needed a bit of stability and Ranieri, being a former coach and even coming through the youth team as a player, he knows the club, knows how the fans are, and also the club atmosphere. So I think even if it's just to finish off the season, I think he's doing an adequate job, let's say. And mathematically, they still have some hope of getting into the Champions League. But that's the word, mathematically. They can still find a way to make a mess of things.
Yeah, well, they are only a point off, and everyone there seems capable of making a mess of things. Kev, is this a game, 1-1, that both teams will be happy with?
Well, yeah, probably. Inter sort of aren't falling away from anybody else. I kind of switched over at half time, being on English time, if you like, thinking the game was over, and I looked at the league table and I saw that Roma had moved up into fourth, and I thought, wow, they're really still in touching distance of fourth. And then I thought, well, yeah, I didn't really think Di Francesco should have been removed anyway. And then when you kind of go, oh, there's a second half, they concede a goal, they're down back into fifth, and you think, right, that's exactly the reason why I don't think Roma are going to finish fourth this year. Because that's, that, you know, whichever coach you've got there, that's what they just keep on doing. You know, the inconsistencies, the poor goals that they've dropped all over the show. I just think that top four we've got now is there for the rest of the season, maybe.
It was quite a Roma-esque goal to concede as well, right? A ball to the back post, no one marking Ivan Perisic, and he's got an easy goal. Florenzi was back in the team, and you could probably hold him accountable for the goal they've conceded. With every mistake he makes, he just looks like less and less of a right back, which we've kind of known for a long time that he isn't, but he's he was always just standing in there, and now it just seems to be his position, Vito, and I can't really work out why.
When they switched him to right back, and it was Rudy Garcia from memory that made that switch, seemed to work for a bit, but I suppose other coaches have sort of taken advantage of that and thought, let's keep him there. I don't think it's a good move in the long term, and hopefully whoever coaches him next season realises that Florenzi has to play as a right midfielder or even as a right winger, especially if they put Cengiz Under for sale. So he's the kind of guy that can actually offer energy on the wings, and he can chip in with the odd goal, but defending is not his main strength, and just the whole back line in general needs restructuring anyway, so they might as well look for a half-decent right-back, especially if Rick Karsdorp can't stay fit for a season because he has his own issues with fitness.
Kev, do you know what they should do? Do you know who they should bring in to sort out their defensive problems?
Bruno Alves?
Obviously. Big Bruno Alves, mate. Get him in. He sort out any defense. Play him in goal. Better than Morante. Better than your friend, Robin Olsen. Of course, speaking of Morante, actually.
You could probably play Bruno Alves in goal. Save.
He made an excellent save in the first half that he then nearly ruined by fumbling a shot 2 minutes later. But come on, give him some credit.
Well, I feel like any time I see a goalkeeper in goal that isn't Robin Olsen, then I'm more than happy to praise them, to be perfectly honest. It's the problem with I'm going to sound a little bit negative here, but the problem with goalkeepers being forced into making these great saves is, like you just alluded to, is that there's something wrong in front of them. And maybe Roma do need someone like Bruno Alves. At the very, very top of the show, we highlighted Juventus's defensive frailties and the lack of Chiellini.
Sometimes, do you know who Juventus needs?
And Bruno Alves, yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's not. I was going to say it's that elder statesman that could actually organise a defence. It's not. I think it's talent. It's not age. It's not experience. Sometimes it's down to talent. There's a plenty of younger centre-halves across Europe that are able to do this. And I think it's quite a difficult skill.
Absolutely. It's the way... Experience obviously comes into it for a centre-back, right? But when you watch... I'm sorry, we're talking about him. When you watch Bruno Alves play... When there's a ball in the air and you see the way he's looking at it and the way he attacks it, you have no doubt in your mind that he's going to win the header every single time. I've compared him to a dog jumping for food on the podcast before, but that's exactly what it is. He's like an animal when he just sees something there. He goes for it and he wins it. And Roma don't have that.
No, they have two tree trunks usually.
Never one to hold back, Vito. Fantastic. But they just blatantly have problems. And this fixture is actually one with the fixture with the most goals in Serie A ever. 499 of them, which is quite impressive. I was hoping it would get to 500. Sadly, didn't quite make it.
498 of them conceded by Robin Olsen.
he's not quite that bad. Dev, come on, he didn't even play today. So 490, whatever. Okay, what else? El Shaarawy scored. Surprise, surprise, he cut in onto his right foot and curled one into the far corner. Any shocks there? No? Move on?
No, not at all.
Okay, Kev, you were at the Stadio Renato Dall'Aro today. You saw Bologna pump Sampdoria 3-0. They're safe.
I think they are safe. It was my first trip to the Dall'Aro, and
let's talk about the stadium then before we go to the football.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was one of those places where particularly if you're fighting relegation, and let's say you're a win or two away from saving yourselves from relegation, it was a beautifully sunny day down here in Bologna, so the crowd were out. And it was the ideal environment for a game of that sort of magnitude. But then also, as I sort of sat there watching the game, I thought to myself, this place must be, because it's obviously a very open stadium, it must
also be thoroughly miserable with the rain pouring down on you, thinking about the form that they had at the start of the season and how counterproductive that can be for the team. But yeah, wonderful stadium. Love the old arch and the tower that's still there. Yeah, and the fans were out again, as I said earlier, in the droves, and it was brilliant.
Oh, the Bologna fans are amazing. Which, you were sitting in the same end as the Sampdoria fans, right?
Yes, I was in the cheap seats, so, which was nice because it meant it was full, because I think some of the more expensive seats were a little sparsely populated. But yeah, we were near the Sampdoria fans, and they were very vocal all the way through the game. But then it was, you know, because I was telling who I was with how good the game was going to be, because Sampdoria is also fighting for European places. And actually, I was quite disappointed with Samp first half. I thought they weren't negative, but they were certainly very passive in their approach. They didn't really do much in the way of attacking, and it was all Bologna. But you can obviously give Bologna a little bit of credit that they went looking for a win.
We'll start with Bologna, because Sinisa Mihailovic has come in there and he has turned things around quite a lot. But I'm skeptical to give him too much credit because I've seen his previous work, and it makes me just think that Pippo Inzaghi was just that bad that Vito, anyone who came in would have gotten them out of trouble.
Inzaghi was terrible, and I think we've made that clear previously. But I do think Mihailovic has done a pretty good job so far. And personally, I think the performances under him have been better than not only under Inzaghi, but they've probably been more exciting than some of the stuff we were watching under Roberto Donadoni. So the big test will be next season, you know, because more than likely Bologna should be staying up, and then Bologna will have a proper preseason under Mihailovic. He'll probably get some more of his ideas across, and then also depends what they do in the transfer market. But so far, I think he's done a good job. And as bad as Pippo was, I think Sinisa deserves some praise for rejuvenating the team. And they're playing more offensively than what they did under the previous two coaches. And I think this team looks probably more offensive than most of the other sides he's coached previously, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a fair point. He does have a bit of talent in that squad to do something in terms of setting up a team to attack. But someone who has really impressed this season is Eric Pulgar. Kev, he's the captain. He scored again today. And I think that might be his fourth or fifth goal since Mihailovic came in. And he's really impressing for them.
Yeah, he did really well today. He was driving the team on. His free kick, his free kick was a wonderful effort from a really, really stupid Tonelli foul down in the corner. There was, you know, Palacio was going nowhere. Palacio was doing his best Santander impersonation at times today. Awful second touch. But
well, Santander doesn't get a second touch because his first is so bad generally, but continue.
But yeah, no, Pulgar looks like a talent. Hopefully they'll keep him there next year.
Yeah, you would hope so. I guess he is captain, so probably more likely to keep him given that situation. But you mentioned Lorenzo Tonelli. He's not the most consistent of defenders you've got there, Vito. So I reckon you could probably do with getting a big, strong, consistent centre-back in. Any in mind?
Look, as much as you love Bruno Alves, I think I would personally try to see if there's another one back in his homeland, because Portugal, they got quite a few gems. They did beat Italy in the under-19s final, so I'm sure there's another clone like him out there that we might be able to sneak in cheap, and then Ferrero can sell him for 50 million euros or something. That's just how the club works.
Vito's refusing to be drawn in, Connor.
That's just, Vito, there's no one on earth like Bruno Alves. There never will be. He's 37 and he'll still be this good when he's 73. So you could sign him this year, sell him in 10 for 50 million, and you'd still get some good business out of that. So Bruno Alves is the answer for every team's questions, even if those if those questions aren't defensive ones. But Vito, what on earth happened to your boys today?
As Kevin touched upon earlier, we just were rather simplistic and slow, maybe not sluggish, but it's just very predictable and slow with our passing. We looked rather lethargic in our approach, and we just really couldn't play that final ball going forward. I thought defensively, Bologna did very well. They were reasonably compact, but they also exposed our frailties in defence. And look, our defence looked open, but Bologna's attacking threats, I think they were able to expose that defensive frailty. And I don't think it was a case of just us playing bad. I think they made us look bad, and they certainly made the most of it. The real downside is that although Bologna probably should have won by more than 3-0, I think Emil Odero had a terrible game, especially in that second half, because he made some good saves in the first. And those frailties, you know, I think in some games he's probably just as bad as Robin Olsen.
Yeah, he was poor today. He really, really was. Particularly, and I don't know where to go with this, because he was quite bad on Orsolini's goal. So I don't know whether we should criticise Aldero or give Orsolini some credit for what was a really technically proficient strike. Kev, I'll let you decide.
No, it's although it was technically good to keep the ball down, get on target from the height that it dropped. You know, it was the other end of the stadium for me, but Aldero has got to be doing better with that. I'm not even sure if he needs to dive. He could have taken a step to his right and just claimed it within his arms. And yeah, it was horrific. The crowd obviously already being 2-0 up, and I think that was probably the 87th, 88th minute. It just sort of sent them into raptures, almost in that party atmosphere, because it was comical. And, you know, Sample really, really poor on the day.
All right, well, that'll do. Empoli 2, Spal 4. Spal, we thought were safe after their win against Juventus last week. They've gone and got another win. And this one's probably more important for them because it was against the team occupying the final relegation spot. And Vito, it's bad news for Empoli.
Well, it is very bad news because after having a great game last week against Atalanta, almost specifically Dragowski in goal, they've gone on and conceded 4 against their relegation rival. And probably until recent weeks, they weren't a very prolific squad spell. Now they're chipping in with the goals. Antenucci scored a great goal to score the fourth, and even the third one, but Petagna was pretty good too. So yeah, they're scoring when it really matters most. And an interesting stat that I saw is that Andrea Petagna, he scored 14 goals this season, and that's the most for any Spal player in Serie A history. So he's already got a record, and yeah, big improvement on his Atalanta form, which is good for him personally.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm very, very happy for him because I really like him as a player. I've always said the only thing he was missing was being able to score, and he seems to have found that at Spal. So long may it continue for him. And like you said, his second goal was a very, very well taken strike. But Spal have now just lost one of their last 5, winning each of the other 4, which is some turnaround given where they were. So if Spal had lost each of those last games, they'd still be in the relegation zone, obviously. But Empoli are now 4 points adrift through Udinese, and it looks like it's going to be the Tuscans who get relegated. But oh well. Kev, Genoa 0, Torino 1. Torino are still there when it comes to fighting for Europe, and they could sneak in.
Yeah, this is a bit like when I said I looked at the table and thought, oh, how Roma leapt to where they are. You know, Torino are 6th. If the Coppa Italia goes, if you like, their way, that they're opened up another place for the league positions. They're really just fighting it out with Atalanta, and maybe, you know, you got Lazio that are just seem to be shooting themselves in the foot. Like they have kind of crept up, and for once, it's not fully been due to the goals of Andrea Belotti.
Yeah, it's basically because Mazzarri has them generally well set up. But Vito, you must have taken some happiness in seeing an ex-Genoa player, Christian Ansaldi, defeat the Grifone.
Yeah, it's one of those pieces of, you could say irony, but yeah, just a coincidence, you know. He's got the Genoa history in him, but no, he's done the goods for Granata. And I'd probably say he's been one of the best players this season, Ansaldi. He can play as a wing-back, can play in central midfield. So it doesn't matter where Mazzarri plays him, he's still able to do a job for this Granata side.
He's been so much better in midfield, though.
Yeah, I'd say so too. Mm. I agree.
Just looking at this now, Cagliari beat Frosinone 1-0. That's Frosinone gone, 10 points adrift. Not mathematically, but let's be honest, they're not coming back from that. And Udinese and Sassuolo, in one of the most pointless games of the season, drew one each in Udine. Let's go to Rome, because there was a funny result here to finish on. Lazio hosting already relegated Chievo, one of the worst teams in Serie A history. A formality? No. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic was an idiot in the first half, got himself sent off for absolutely no reason, and Lazio lost 2-1 to Chievo. Kev, how?
Well, partly because Milinkovic-Savic is an idiot. the way that he kicked him, I kind of thought the opposition player was going to turn around and laugh at it, you know, because it was like a school ground boot up the backside that, you know, you kind of give to your friend when they, you know, because it was a nothing kind of challenge from the opposing player. But Lazio once again looked flat. You know, they don't necessarily only look flat against the big sides as they've done this year. And it's one of those results when somebody's already relegated. Yeah, it's almost become a bit of a cliche in football. You get relegated one week, and the next week you'll take points off of whoever that is you're gonna play. It's the pressure's off. But I don't know if I can fully go behind that sort of theory, because, you know, the pressure's been off Chievo since about Christmas when it looked like they were relegated.
Yeah, no, I thought it too, and then I had the very same kind of steps back where I thought, no, Chievo have had no pressure since basically the start of the season when they got given the points deduction, but they did get the win. There was something else I wanted to ask you about this game, but I've completely forgotten it, which is useful. Oh, no, sorry. It wasn't really about this game. It was about Lazio. And we're going back to Acerbi Gate, guys, sadly, because Lazio's fans in midweek, they, surprise, surprise, sang racist things about Bakayoko. Are you surprised, Vito?
Not surprised at all, because the Lazio ultras unfortunately have that negative reputation, you know, having right-wing political views, and they're amongst the most racist hooligans, or, you know, diehard supporters in Italian football. So nobody should be surprised with that. And unfortunately, because it's Italy, very few people should be surprised that they weren't punished for those chants.
Yeah. Fills you with joy, doesn't it, Kev?
Is there any, because this was Tuesday, Wednesday against Udinese?
Yeah, it was the
Wednesday European time.
So is it absolutely case closed? I haven't sort of seen if the Italian Federation have said that they're going to sanction Lazio at all for this, or if they just completely ignored this
scenario. It seems like they're ignoring it.
Well, then that's even sadder, isn't it, than, you know, say they got a mediocre fine that was lower than what Milan got fined for the Acerbi gate. Having actually making no reference to this whatsoever is extremely sad once again.
It's horrible, especially now, because you see videos show up on social media, so there's so much evidence for it. You can see people, like, there's a video doing the rounds from inside the curva, and you can see people's faces so, so clearly, because this person is amongst the people singing it, and nothing's going to happen. But Lazio get hit with jokes of punishments every season for racism, and it doesn't stop.
If you liken this to the Chelsea, there's a Chelsea Mo Salah chance. I found it, I was very impressed actually with Chelsea's stance on this and whether this can ever actually happen in Italy. I'm kind of not sure, but those fans never even made it into the stadium because of the knowledge around the fans that go to the games. You know, if you like the usual suspects, as you probably call them, they were stopped at the gate before going into that match in Prague, and then they got hit with bans. And I don't think enough publicity was made about that in English football, but that's the talk. That's the sort of zero tolerance that you need to sort of stamp these sort of things out.
Yeah, but if you look at what's happening at the moment with the social media thing, where players were boycotting social media in an attempt to try and get Facebook, Instagram, Twitter to stamp down on racist comments on their posts, and what happened was more people were racist on the posts about standing up against racism. Those stories in England became stories. People cared. Here, there's people showing videos of racist people shouting, and nothing's done because nobody cares enough. But you've got, if you look at Lazio's ownership structure, if you remember the absolutely disgusting things they did about the Roma fans and Anne Frank, was it last season they did that? And then Lotito went and presented something as a peace offering and then got caught saying something that he shouldn't have been saying. And it's unbelievable. So how are Lazio fans supposed to behave themselves when the owner of their club can't even do it? There just seems to be too many idiots everywhere here, and it's not going to stop because people don't care enough to stop it, which is always the conclusion we come to when we speak about racism in Italian football. And it's really, really uplifting. But there you go. Kev, any positive notes to end on?
Bologna's lovely. I fell in love with the
Classic.
city.
Yeah, it's a good place. It's a good place. It really, really is. Did you eat any nice food?
Oh, well, I've just had a lovely pizza. I had some ragu alla
Good.
bolognese, on what was that, Friday afternoon. Yeah, it's been a delight.
You'll have to get yourself up here tomorrow. Get some cappelletti and brodo into you. Get some tortellini with spinach and ricotta. Oh, come to Parma and you'll eat well. So I'll see you tomorrow, actually. So
Yep,
that will
I'll
be
be there tomorrow.
interesting. I'll give you a list of foods that you need to eat while you're here. And you won't go. Although tomorrow's Easter Sunday, will anywhere be open?
Don't know. Actually, that's what being older and miserable, I often moan about the stagnated kickoffs that have got worse and worse over the last few years. It's not until you come to Italy for Easter to catch one game and realize that it stops you catching multiple games because there's nothing really other than what we've had today, that you actually realize that you now love the sort of stagnated, because it's really, really difficult. I think I watched the highlights of Empoli's spell in the Bologna club store after the game, and then I've struggled to get any other sort of highlights until rushing back to the room. So maybe all the stagnated football kickoffs over a weekend aren't as bad as I previously thought they were.
It definitely helps to see more of it, but it also can be really frustrating when you go to Verona for a 6 o'clock game and can't get home afterwards. So you have to stay in Milan for the night. That's not ideal. But yeah, there's pros and cons. Pros and cons. Vito, have you any positive news to end the week's podcast on? What do
No,
you
we just
think?
talked about it when Torino beat Genoa. That's probably about it. Oh, actually, mate, doesn't affect me personally, but on the Juve theme, Juve Stabia managed to wrap up the title in Serie C, Girone C. So they're going up to Serie B again. So it's a Juve theme, I guess.
Yeah, Juve and then nothing more by name, we should say. But Atalanta play Napoli on what's Pasquetta over here, which is Little Easter, which I love. But I'm annoyed about this. because Atalanta play Fiorentina in the Coppa Italia semi-final second leg on Thursday, and they've been made play on the Monday night despite Fiorentina playing on Saturday, which I just think is crazy. I don't understand it. I'm not happy about it. And if Atalanta lose, expect me to moan a whole lot more about that next week.
Didn't that happen before with the Europa League?
I just think bitter.
I've got a brief memory of that happening to either Atalanta or Lazio playing a Monday, Thursday with the Europa League. But
Probably Atalanta, because at the start of the season, they played on Monday nearly every week when they were in the European qualifiers that they then lost on penalties to Copenhagen.
I think if you get your 2 day breaks between the two, what are you moaning about?
Well, Fiorentina get a 5 day break and they got to rest Chiesa for most of it. I'm not happy. But anyway, that'll do. Happy Easter to everyone if you care. I don't really, but anyway, I'm in Italy, so I suppose I have to. Kev, happy Easter.
Happy Easter, Connor.
Vito, buona Pasqua.
Thank you. Grazie.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, for commenting, for reading the website. Head over to ForzaItalianFootball.com for all of your Serie A coverage. We've got a lot of Juventus stuff going up this week. One of those was written by Kev. Kev, what did you write about specifically?
That this is the worst Juventus side in recent memory.
I think you said it's the worst Juventus side since they returned to Serie A.
It was.
Bear in mind, they finished seventh twice. But anyway, we'll let the readers go over and slaughter you for that. Yeah, do head over to the site because we've got a lot of stuff going up. Vito has something that will be going up tomorrow as well. And there will be plenty more to come over the next week. So until the next round of Serie A, there is nothing for me to say other than ciao for now.
You are listening to the Forza Italian Football Podcast on FNR Football Nation Radio.